As Dana said, I'm Lucy. This is my first time at the conference, and it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you. Sounds like a lot of people in the room are familiar with Teen Vogue. I am the politics editor there. Someone asked me on Thursday if I was a student. I just have really good skincare routine. Thanks to all the beauty supplies I get to liberate from work. I know maybe there's a contradiction in inviting Teen Vogue to a socialism conference on its face, especially for the youth spin-off brand of a magazine so synonymous with capitalist excess. If you're not familiar with our work, I'd encourage you to check out Teen Vogue's coverage of social justice issues, of capitalism, revolutionary theory, and Karl Marx. Or you could check out the right-wing op-eds that have accused me of, quote, clickbait communism and, quote, teaching your daughters Marxism and revolution. It is an interesting contradiction, and I live with it every day, but especially on the days when I wear my Banned Billionaires t-shirt to our offices in the World Trade Center and share an elevator with Anna Wintour. Suffice to say, the barbarians are beyond the gates, we are in the tower. So, despite a certain 2020 Democratic frontrunner's lack of empathy for young people, the lifeblood of Teen Vogue's political coverage right now is youth movements. Youth activism has a long history here in the US and around the world, perhaps most notably domestically in the civil rights, queer liberation, and Vietnam era anti-war movements of the mid-century, but we know there are so many more recent examples as well. Marx himself was not yet 30 when he penned his manifesto. Fully grown, no doubt, but I'd argue it's not impossible to imagine him, you know, somewhere in America today, struggling to pay off student loans that are arresting the development of huge portions of entire generations, or just struggling to make rent in a minimum wage job. I frequently interview young people who are on the front lines of justice issues, whether it's racial justice, like the teen organizer who helped spearhead the fight to remove that statue in Charlottesville and is still fighting for a more racially just education at her high school. I interview people about migrant justice, like the young folks who are worried that the Trump administration revoking their parents' temporary protected status will create a new wave of family separation, and a great deal of many other issues. For the last several months, I've had the privilege of covering an international movement of strikes, die-ins, and occupations led primarily by Generation Z pioneers like Greta Thunberg. These young people are turning resistance into rebellion in real time, all with the intent of pressing our existing world order into action that will address the climate crisis, which, as we've documented at Teen Vogue, is already impacting people across the planet, intersecting, as crisis often does, with injustices faced by women and girls in places like Malawi and Bangladesh, and by indigenous peoples whose removal from the stewardship of our ecosystems is a mistake we haven't yet accounted for. Youth leaders like those here today and from groups like Fridays for Future, Extinction Rebellion, and Zero Hour are grappling in real time with the notion that every step they take towards their future is towards an uncertain one. This raises a great many questions, including one a 16-year-old who wrote an op-ed for me just last month posed when she asked, "What use is a college degree on an uninhabitable planet?" Questions like these may seem to have an element of nihilism to them, but her point was that any university she attends must be divested from fossil fuels. All across the planet, members of Generation Z and Millennials are turning what could easily remain abject nihilism into the actions we're seeing, and people are taking notice. In case you missed it, just this week, the Secretary General of OPEC said that climate campaigners are perhaps the greatest threat to our industry, the oil industry, moving forward. Today, I am extremely honored to be joined by Haven Coleman of the U.S. Youth Climate Strike and Sally Taylor from the Chicago chapter of the Sunrise Movement. So without further ado, I would like for them to introduce themselves so we can talk tactics and what we mean when we say system change, not climate change. So would anybody like to volunteer to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. My name is Sally Taylor. I'm here from the Sunrise Chicago Hub. I use she, her, hers pronouns. And I moved here 8 months ago from North Carolina and joined Sunrise like earlier this year.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Hayden Coleman. I am 13 years old. I am one of the co-founders and co-executive directors of U.S. Youth Climate Strike, a movement of youth in the U.S. who are trying to get adults and politicians to act in the right way through our strikes and many other things. I was born in Kansas. I grew up in Denver, Colorado.
Cool. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how you both came to your work with climate. Sally, I know you told me a story when we talked last week about North Carolina's experience with Hurricane Florence. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could tell us about like how you came to work with the Sunrise and maybe a little bit about that as well.
So I didn't really imagine that I would be doing this kind of work at all. I was away from home when Hurricane Florence hit, and I had that devastating experience of reading about your home in the news, which I'm sure many people here have had that experience. And so it really hit our coastal towns and cities the hardest, specifically like Elizabethtown, New Bern, Lumberton, Wrightsville. Is there anyone from North Carolina here? What's up, y'all? I grew up in Chapel Hill and have family in the mountains and also on the coast in the Piedmont. And I was reading about it and I was like, I have to do something. And so I went and stayed with my friend and kind of crashed on their couch, and we volunteered with a place called Adjust Hurricane Florence Recovery. And so this happened in early September of 2018. I got there probably late September, early October. And there was still so much work to be done. And there had already been federal aid that had been provided and the Red Cross and things like that. But my takeaways from that experience of getting up early and working in a warehouse, I was like, sorting toothpaste on my hands and knees and working with kids and working with elders and working with community leaders and church leaders and people in rehab, that like the aid that was the most efficiently organized and getting across the state was by a chain of neighbors, helping neighbors, and it was the community efforts. And that anybody can be a leader, and the person that was organizing this had quit her job. She was a bartender before, and just that, like, Hurricane Florence, when it hit landfall, it was a Category 1 storm, and it uprooted trees, and Wilmington was separated from the mainland by water, and 40 people died in North Carolina, and lots of people had to be rescued. And just that the community, like communities like us, people in this room, like we are the first responders to this crisis. And I'm gonna try and wrap it up, but basically the IPCC report came out like that week, that I started to volunteer. And I think there's like a lot of little things that accumulate when you do this kind of work, but like I think like my experience volunteering and reading that report was kind of like a moment of reckoning. And shortly after, I watched Sunrise Movement sit in a Nancy Pelosi's office, which I think that brought in a lot of people to the movement. So just like, and they were like, what is your plan? and just like seeing people my age like singing and telling stories and transforming their anger and their fear and their grief into action and into hope was like, I was like, yeah, gonna join.
Hi. I really, sorry, thinking. Okay. I really got into climate work. So like 3 years ago, I was like 10, I think, about to turn 11. My teacher, I used to live in Colorado Springs. It's a very conservative town. Like, there's a long story of like kids, evil. I had this really great teacher, and he integrated some of those going on in the real world with our lessons. He was a history teacher, but he integrated deforestation into one of our things. And so I love sloths. I love them. They're like my favorite animal. And at the time, I was like, I will die for you, sloths. And so when I heard that deforestation was killing my sloth, I was like, oh gosh, now I gotta fight this. So I was researching how I can save the sloths, and I was like, oh, and I'll also save the other animals that live with the sloths. So win-win. And then I found climate change, because if you're on the internet, there's like other stuff that's equal to what you're researching. So like, and then you'll go down funny holes of like, oh, this is interesting, and then you'll get lost on your original topic. I found climate change and I went down that funny hole. It scared me, but because it is a scary topic. But then I was like, oh my gosh, it's a part of deforestation, but like, this is more than a few sloths. This is more than like the whole ecosystem of the Amazon. It's the whole world, and people are gonna die. So many people are gonna die. So much famine, war, death, more death. It's gonna be really tragic. And so I was scared, but then I was like, and also angry, because if you learn about this, you're like, everybody knows it's bad. So I wanted to do something, because if you're a kid, if something's bad, you do something about it. So yeah. I educated myself, and through Google and the Climate Reality Project, and then I started educating my parents, and then my community, and then politicians, because it's a conservative town. So like city board, my representative, and the senator is like, in Colorado, is pretty evil. Not evil, but like, he's like, you know, if not evil.
This is the right crowd for that.
And then I started doing more like speaking at rallies, speeches. It just snowballed over the years, and then I did. I'm here today, and I am now working and one of the founders of USU Climate Strike.
Haven, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about the strike. I know March 15th was the big day earlier this year when we saw the global climate strike. So I was wondering if you could just give folks a little insight into what the organization for that looked like, because I know I want to shout out your other co-leads, Isra Hirsi and Alexandria Villasenor.
Alexandria does not work with us anymore.
Okay.
So it's just Isra and I.
Cool. Well, so how did you and Isra, you know, come to see the strike movement that has been playing out across Europe for, you know, months now, and decide you wanted to find a way to bring that to the States?
Can you rephrase the question?
Yeah.
Sorry.
When did you first hear about like climate strikes as a tactic, and what made you decide it was the right thing to pursue?
So I heard about it since I heard about it through like the news and stuff. And since my tactic through trying to fight climate change is, okay, somebody's doing this, I'm gonna try to do it too, because the US wasn't doing it as much, like it's still not. Hi, Isra! Sorry, I noticed her in the back. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna try this, because it seemed very effective, because if there's something that I wanted to try, because I've tried literally everything else to get adults' attention and politicians' attention and adults to do the right action, because there are people, like a lot of people fighting, but we're not doing the right amount. So I was just like, I'm gonna try this. And then I reached out to Fridays for Future US. They didn't really want to do a lot for, they wanted to do stuff for March 15th, sorry, mixing up the different dates. But, and then, so I wanted to do something more for it and like get other people from all different states. So I was like, I'm gonna do, New Year's Eve Climate Strike was originally intended just for March 15th and just be a group of people, then it grew into more. But then I DM'd Isra on Instagram, and I think most of our work has become from social media and DMing people. but then we found state leads, then we got a lot of, and then it snowballed into where we are now, and we did different strikes, like the May 3rd strike, which is lesser known because it was harder because it was a short time, and yeah.
Is there another one coming up people should know about?
September 20th. We'll be announcing more stuff on social media soon for March 20th because it's a little farther away, but it is going to be one of the big major ones, and it's super exciting.
So I'd like to talk about the tactic that we've seen Sunrise get a lot of play in the news for, which is, as you mentioned, the occupations of Pelosi's office. I think it was Sunrise activists we saw take on Dianne Feinstein. And just last week, Sunrise folks were outside of the Democratic National Committee offices pressing for a climate debate amongst the 2020 candidates. So, I wonder if you can tell folks a little bit about what's been happening on the ground here in Chicago with Sunrise and, you know, some strategy talk from your perspective.
Yeah. So I think it's like super interesting how, you know, there were really not that many people at those sit-ins, and there were not that many people at like the DNC offices in Washington this past week. But the strategic locations and the moments and like anticipating them and being there can have like an enormous impact and can bring people in. And I think that that's kind of like part of the lifeblood of Sunrise, political strategy. And yeah, and I think like what is essential to those demonstrations is that people stand up and they tell their stories, right? It's they're personal and they're raw and they're real and they're from all over the country, and that's what's most powerful about it, is giving young people this platform. I was like talking to this member out in, I think in Oregon, and she was telling me this story about how she was walking through the snow with her mother, and she pointed down at this like little trail of blood. She was like, "Do you know what that is?" And she said, "No." And she said, "That's a dying elk. That's bleeding to death because of ticks, because of the overpopulation of ticks, right?" So that's like an incredibly powerful, tragic image, and just, you know, things like that that I have never even thought of. Get national attention. And I mean, in terms of like here in Chicago, we were part of the Senate Sprint Actions. You know, the very first action I ever took with Sunrise, I was by myself and I bird dogged Tammy Duckworth, and I was new. I was new to Chicago, and like I was like just, I mean, I'm still learning about like who my representatives are, and like I was like standing there with a microphone, and you know, she said no to my face. She was like 100% no, not gonna, at this time, she was like not gonna co-sponsor, you know? But like, yeah, I think being told no in the right moment in the right time can also be really powerful. And it, with what you were saying about Dianne Feinstein, I mean, just like, yeah. But like, it's just like absurd way to talk to children. Yeah, and Chicago, there's a summit coming up, a Midwest summit in Detroit around the second presidential debates. I think right now it's, we have been at the forefront of demanding a climate debate. I can't even imagine what it would be like to have all of these candidates having to talk about it, like just climate, the climate crisis, you know? That would be incredible. That is like directly changing the political landscape. And so that's kind of what's on the horizon for us. And and the strikes too, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, what you're talking about is a very important point, that forcing the conversations mm-hmm. is an essential step at this stage of it. So I want to ask you all about, we're talking about the youth participation in this movement. I'm wondering if either of you has any ideas on what it would look like if we saw adults across this country stand up, walk out, mm-hmm. occupy places, some kind of general strike even. In order to really let the people in power know that this is an issue that we're not going to stand for silence on.
Hi again.
Adults, they do strike with us sometimes, and which is really cool. And if we as youth are scaring the children of the people, what is it? The OPEC, sorry, my mom's up. I have loose memory, but OPEC, the children of the people at OPEC, their children are seeing their peers saying your dad and mom's work is killing us. And they're like, is this true? Are you killing my future? If a bunch of youth are scaring giant OPEC, and if we're together scaring them, imagine what if adults and if everybody in your work or in your office, it'll shut down the work, and you can't just fire all the people in your... change. And if there's a ton of people who are striking, that means that a ton of people, they're willing to actually do work, because striking isn't everything. And adults, you guys can vote, you guys can run for office, you guys have more of a influence in some ways where we can't reach those levels. So if you guys are willing to strike with us, then you guys are obviously going to be willing to do more, right? So if the adults are striking with us, one, it would be bigger in economics, and influencing other politicians and... Sorry. it's gonna affect a lot of change. And we're already seeing that the small amount of people, even adults, it's stopping the flow to money to fossil fuel industries. Mm-hmm. It's influencing their actual change. Mm-hmm. So if we have everybody, it's gonna be awesome.
Sally, any thoughts on a general strike or maybe a mass occupation of Capitol Hill?
I just wanna add, it's just super powerful to hear Haven talk right now, and I think that what is important is that this is youth-led, because it is true that it is our futures. Mm-hmm. And Sunrise is a mass protest movement, but it's also a youth empowerment movement. Mm-hmm. And youth-led movements are the intersection of criticality and hope, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there are some mistakes that we're not willing to repeat in the legacy of environmental organizing, right? This is different. Being in those spaces, I think in a lot of organizing spaces, not necessarily just youth-led, but particularly youth-led, you're dismantling these oppressive systems of professionalism, right? It's not about ways of evaluating worthiness and experience don't apply, right? It's about showing up, and we will train you, and those are built, those systems of dominance are built to keep young people queer people, gender non-conforming people, poor people out. And so not replicating those systems within your movement is essential. That wasn't answering your question specifically, but
very valuable insight.
Right, yeah. Yes. I think it is, like, you know, I think Sunrise is of the belief of, that research by Erica Chenoweth, who co-authored the book that I'm forgetting the name of right now, but that if 3.5% of any population takes part in massive disruption, you know, that movement cannot fail. And so, like, that's a goal, right? And that's a lot of people, but that's also, like, a lot of young people, right? Mm-hmm.
I want to turn to the name of this panel we're having today, System Change, Not Climate Change, and hear from both of you on what system we're talking about when we say system change. Because, you know, I think the idea is that we know that this economic system all around us, embodied specifically in things like the fossil fuel industry, but in the larger consumer goods industry as well, choices are made very far up the production line that people have to live with every day. So I want to throw it to either of you, you know, what is the system that we're trying to change?
We need to rewire our society because our capitalistic society right now is the business as usual thing that we're going towards that is hurting us. So it's where we need to change it to something other than capitalism. System change, not climate change. It's not something that's like a rant or like something that people just say. It's where it means that we need to change because even the scientists are saying it. They're like, what you're doing right now is screwing us over. I'm sorry, but like, so they're like, even scientists are telling people this. So why don't we do it? Except it's the politicians, it's the money, it's oil, it's all that stuff. But we can do it if we want it, and we have the power to be able to do it, so we just have to. It's just where we're scared to, because it's something different, and it's in the details where people, like, they'll be like, I want this, but these certain details scare me. So it's where we need to get over that fear of certain things and find a way to make it so we're not gonna be like hurt in the future. Like, I want to have a nice future. I want my generation to have a safe future. I don't want people to die. I don't want people to get hurt, especially like the low income communities and communities that are on the outside, because they're the ones that do the least damage. They're the ones who are being pushed out the most, but they're the ones getting hurt the most.
I think systems change, it's about the transition. It has to be comprehensive, and it has to be backed by a movement. Damon Drummer spoke at the Sunrise Chicago Town Hall. He's one of the executive directors of New Consensus, who will be writing the Green New Deal. And he sort of answered this question by like looking to our past and examining some of these massive federal infrastructural programs that have entirely reshaped our country for the better and for worse. right? Like building highways. And he was talking about 1941, where FDR called for us to manufacture like 180,000 airplanes, which at the time was ridiculous because our capacity was to build like 3,000. And so entire industries were created from nothing. And by the end of the war, I think there was like, the number is 300,000 were produced every year. But the thing is, you know, De Mons said that more workers died in those factories than on the battlefields. So that's why it has to be a just transition. That's why it has to be about Medicare for all. That's why, you know, it's about like shifting our economy, which is a fossil fuel economy, you know, that those workers will have jobs, right?
I think this is actually a really great transition point to my last question before we open this up to discussion. You know, what does this future look like for both of you, for your generations, for the young people, you know, all across the United States and around the world who are grappling with this reality every day now in the face of forces, not just, you know, these economic forces, but things like environmental racism and the forces that are, you know, climate change is impacting people along the same axes of oppression that for, you know, a lot of human history we've seen people suffer under. So to try and take a more optimistic bent, can you give us a vision of the future where this system change happens?
Hello.
Not how I wanted to say that word, but
so I'm thinking where we don't. So this, I haven't done much kid stuff for the past 3 years. I get a call and text my friends, not hang out with them at the mall or something. So being able to be a kid, but like since I'm planning to fight this as long as I'm needed to fight this because. It's obviously not getting done anytime soon, which is sort of disappointing. Yeah. So I'm hoping we're either, like, my generation's able to live, like, since I think I'm gonna be, like, end of college when, I think, 23? I'm bad at math. But, so, I want to be able to live, I want my generation to be able to live to, in an where they don't have to worry as much as I'm worrying right now. I have a 5-year-old sister. She's going to be like still in high school by 2030. I want her to be able to have experiences that's not fighting climate change every minute. I want it where she doesn't have to worry that everything's gonna collide around her, all her friends, all everyone in this world's gonna, like, I want it to be where it's semi-fixed, since climate change is right now, so, and it's happening right now, we're just fighting so it doesn't get worse. So I want it where it doesn't get worse, so everybody's safe, because it's right now, like, it's like a dystopian novel, and it's really scary, and I don't want to be able to have my sisters and my future everybody around us be in a dystopian novel. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, sometimes I have trouble answering this question. I think sometimes I still have trouble envisioning the future, which is so important. You know, I think that, like, you know, saying that, you know, I hear people in this movement say a lot, like, you know, the world is ending, there is no future, or then that's why this is the most important thing. And I think that sometimes that can be an example of your life experience, right? Because depending, you know, like I think under capitalism, the distribution of life chances are unequal. And so a lot of people's worlds are ending all the time, all over the world. And so, you know, absolutely, climate change will make every single issue worse, and it will fracture along race and class and gender lines. We know this, and but I think, you know, part of this future, you know, it has to be grounded in the past, right? There are centuries of environmental and racial and economic violence that is a part of our country's history, and it's a chance to redefine a social contract. And I think part of it is, you know, someone said this yesterday in the Eco-Socialism Against the Market panel, someone made a comment, and I'm forgetting their name, but they said, you know, the first time that you say hello to your neighbors, you don't want it to be during a hurricane. And so, like, you know, today, I think, like, part of, like, building this, like, new world is, it's always politically radical to get to know your neighbors. And,
woo!
Right, and so, like, you know, that is important work, that is system-changing work, and, like, you know, that's part of why I love being in Sunrise, is because, like, we take seriously knowing who we are, right, and getting to know each other, 'cause, yeah.
Thank you.